From WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. There are novels about lawyers, doctors, travelers, and detectives, but what about scientists? Turns out that fictional writing about scientists is kind of rare, but worth looking for, whether or not you, the reader, are a scientist yourself, and we've got some book recommendations for you later this hour. Also, doctors can image your body and decode your genes in search of what ails you, but your information might also be able to help others with similar backgrounds and conditions. And if doctors had access to the records of every patient in the U.S., it could revolutionize the way we diagnose and treat disease. That's the argument being made by one Harvard doctor who's calling for clinical information commons. We start this hour, though, with a completely different use of data. For that matter, a completely different way of perceiving data. We tend to think about looking at numbers and graphs to find patterns, but what if we were to listen to data instead? And I'm not talking about listening to sounds like heartbeats or whale songs, but actually listening to sonic representations or transformations of data like temperatures or wind speeds or oxygen levels. Mark Ballora is a professor of music technology at Pennsylvania State University. He's been sonifying data of all sorts for more than two decades, and he's launching new research to actually test what it is we learn from either looking at or listening to data. He joins me now via Skype. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So I'm guessing that turning scientific data into music isn't the direction you necessarily always imagined your career would take. You actually started in theater. How did you work your way to turning data into music?
Yeah, I started in theater, but I was always interested in synthesizers and strange music. I was interested in stereophony, in emerging practices in multi-channel audio delivery. But I happened to get this call from a physiologist, a fellow named Leon Glass, who said, "Would you be interested in making sound out of some heart rate variability data?" Which sounded interesting enough to me that I said yes before I really even knew what he was talking about. I wound up reading a lot of cardiology for the next few years, and I made that into my thesis, and that became my research topic, and that became my vocation. It went back to that kind of fluke telephone call. I didn't realize that Leon Glass was one of the pioneers of what we call chaos theory. I just thought he was some guy calling me, but that was my first time interacting and working with a really world-class scientific figure. I didn't know how lucky I was.
That work that you did, I think, is a great example of what it means to sonify data as opposed to visualizing data. We all know what a heartbeat itself sounds like, the lub-dub, lub-dub.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're not actually, looking at the heartbeat itself. You're looking at the variability of that heart rate, which is a number or a mathematical function, and turning that into sound. Let's actually hear some of that. This is the heart rate variability of a healthy individual and your sonification of it. It sounds like, I don't know, bells or wind chimes, tinkling glass. How do you turn something as abstract as, the variability of someone's heart rate into a sound like that?
Well, you're kind. I did that so long ago that I listen to that now and I think, ooh, that was kind of rudimentary. But yeah, the data set there, a heart rate variability data set is a set of time intervals. And it's between successive heartbeats. And so cardiologists are interested in what the intrinsic changes in the heart rate ought to sound like. So what we just heard was we had a bunch of numbers. And so it was sort of treating those numbers like a player piano roll. I came up with a little humming sound. The humming sound played a note. The note was derived from the heart rate interval. And so that was kind of the main humming track. And then they measure a thing called the NN50, which is usually a count of how many heartbeat intervals exceed 50 milliseconds from the last one, so extra long intervals. So I thought, well, rather than just look at that as one number from a data set that spans about 6 hours of activity, if I'm sonifying it like this, I could add an annotation. So that's what the little tinkling was. When there was a tinkling, that's when there was an extra long amount of time between heartbeats.
And you mentioned that, of course, this is what it sounds like when it's a healthy person, but it can sound different if there's a health problem involved. Let's listen to the same kind of sonification, but for somebody who has sleep apnea, and see how different that sounds. So that clearly sounds very different than that healthy one that we were hearing. And you've actually argued that while a doctor could look at, you know, EKG data and see those kinds of differences, that our ear is particularly attuned to changes and differences. I mean, how sensitive are we? And do you think this is something that scientists, doctors could be using to diagnose changes, to really analyze their data?
The question is, okay, so you can turn data into something like a musical score and you can play it back, you know, so what? I mean, why is that something that somebody should do particularly? Which gets you into an interesting examination of what the eyes are good at and what the ears are good at. And it turns out the eyes are best at static properties like color or shape or size. The ear, interestingly, works a whole lot faster than the eyes do. The ear takes in its information and transmits it to the brain something like 20 times faster than the eyes do. So really, we hear stuff before we see stuff. And what we hear affects what we see. You know, we respond very quickly to sound. We're extremely affected by music as a species. The ear can pick up patterns sometimes that can be difficult to detect visually. The ear is better at following multiple patterns simultaneously than the eyes are. So if you have highly dimensional data where you're trying to keep track of more than one thing at a time, sonification is a promising way to render that. And then, of course, there are the accessibility features of it. Blind people are not able to look at visual graphs, but they can study them if you make sound out of them.
I'm talking with Mark Ballora. He's professor of music technology at Penn State. You mentioned the ear's ability to perhaps analyze a bit better multiple layers of data. I want to jump from some of your first work to some of your most recent work. And this is a sonification of Hurricane Sandy. Let's listen to a little bit of it and then talk a little bit about the layers, all of the different kinds of data that actually went into creating a sonic representation of a hurricane. We're used to looking at, you know, those satellite images of a whirling hurricane, but that doesn't actually get you all these different layers of data that are actually wrapped into this sound transformation that you've created. So Mark, talk a little bit about all the different layers of data that you put into that.
Yeah, so that's a collaboration with Jenny Evans, who's a professor of meteorology at Penn State. And so we started working together. She asked me to do one storm, and I wound up doing 11, and we're continuing to work together. Well, probably the primary characteristic of the data is air pressure levels. So when the air pressure levels drop, the storm gets more intense. Just cracking the Synthesis 101 textbook, filtered noise sounds like wind. So that sounds like a good start. Why don't I make a filtered noise sound, a whooshing sound, add what you call an LFO, a low frequency oscillator to it. So it goes whew, 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 like that. And then have the rate of that pulsing be mapped from the pressure levels. So as the pressure levels drop, the spinning sound gets faster. It also gets more colored. It gets a little bit more high pitched. So we have this windy spinning sound.
Yeah, it's a really intuitive creation. You listen to it, and it doesn't even have to be explained. Almost you feel that the storm is getting more intense as you hear this whoosh, 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 you know, kind of ramping up.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when I've shown people those videos with the soundtrack, the word that everybody seems to use is visceral. I say, wow, it's a lot more visceral when you have that soundtrack on it. It really sounds like a storm. It really grabs me. It sounds more dangerous. You know, they use words like that. Another layer is the latitude and the longitude, the location of the storm. So the longitude moving east to west is mapped to the stereo position, so it can move between the left and right channels. You need a good stereo system or headphones to hear that one. The latitude was a little trickier, so I needed to create a sound to represent the up or downness of it, the north or southness of it, that didn't compete with the whooshing sound that would blend with it, but you could also listen to it if you wanted to. So after some trial and error, I settled on a pinging sound, kind of a high-pitched pinging that just repeats bing, 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 bing. And as the hurricane moves away from the equator, the pinging drops in pitch. Her primary focus, what she's contributing to the field, is how the shapes of the hurricanes change. She'll tell you that when the storm gets rounder, it tends to get more intense. And she'll tell you it's the same phenomenon as when an ice skater pulls her hands in and spins more quickly. So I needed a third sound layer for that would be distinct from the latitude pinging and the windy whooshing. So I came up with a low growling sound. The bass voice of the sonification is the buzzy sound that represents the shape of the storm.
I'm talking with Mark Ballora of Penn State University about turning data into sound and maybe even music. You know, you've said that you've worked with a lot of different collaborators over 20 years. You've sonified everything from solar wind to Antarctic ice, body temperatures of squirrels. I mean, and clearly your collaborators are finding value in this, but we don't really have a strong understanding of, from a rigorous scientific perspective, what it is people get out of the sound versions of data versus what they get out of the visual sounds of data. And so you're actually going to be working with a marine biologist at University of Rhode Island, sonifying some of her data about things like oxygen and temperature in the ocean, but also testing what students are able to learn from either visual or auditory presentations of the data. So how's that going to work?
Well, I'm actually getting started on her data sets as we speak. She thought that it might be valuable to students in like Oceanography 101 or an Earth Sciences class who are being presented with graphs for the first time describing phenomena that they aren't familiar with. And she thought, well, you know, sometimes the graphs are they're a bit of a hurdle for a beginning student to get over. What if we could turn them into something musical? I suspect they're really going to like it. I suspect that it will make science cool and interesting in a way that it sometimes isn't when it's primarily presented through visuals.
You are a musician, a composer. How do you use these sonifications, you know, not necessarily as data analysis tools, but as musical tools?
Well, lately I've found it most interesting to collaborate with scientists. I just find it really interesting to learn about all these other scientific domains that I didn't know about. I didn't know anything about cardiology. I didn't know anything about meteorology. Now I'm learning about oceanography. That's just kind of neat. Another grant that I got from NACFI is with a marine biologist and cellist named Heather Spence, who also makes recordings underwater and studies the acoustics of what she hears under there. And we'll be working on a performance piece. It will be a performance slash education piece to educate people about ocean conditions. And it will feature her on the cello and probably my wife on the flute and electroacoustics and underwater recordings kind of all rolled into one in this performance piece. That's my next project.
Well, that's something we are definitely going to have to check back in here. In the meantime, Mickey Hart, best known as the drummer for the Grateful Dead, has already done a little bit of this, composing music around your sonifications. He's actually got two albums that use your sonifications. I wonder what that process of working with him has been like, and do you have a favorite track maybe that we could play on our way out?
Yeah, that was that came out of a film actually that he was doing with George Smoot, who's a cosmologist at Lawrence Berkeley Labs, and they were making this science outreach film called Rhythms of the Universe, and they wanted to have visualizations and sonifications and narration and go into the human species' inherent fascination with the cosmos. I don't really know what went into putting these together. I mean, Mickey's in California, I'm in Pennsylvania, so I would just upload stuff and send an email and say, well, here it is, and then they would take it and they would use it however they were using it. I just read about it in the liner notes and go, oh, it's in there, is it? Okay. You know, and so it's all part of the mix somewhere. So when they had the preview of Rhythms of the Universe at the Smithsonian, actually somebody asked, what's the music in there and what are the sonifications in the movie? And I thought, well, if you can't tell the difference between Mickey's music and my sonifications, I consider that to be high praise. So...
Indeed. Mark Ballora is a professor of music technology at Penn State University. He joined us via Skype. Mark, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Up next, putting big data to a completely different use, making better medical diagnoses. In the meantime, enjoy a little bit of the sonification of the cosmic microwave background radiation. Compliments of Mark Ballora.